Okay, so I'm with Dr. Jean Johnson, and today we're discussing overcoming overwhelm. Jean, I've had the pleasure of working with you in my young career, and I've seen you manage lots of really challenging people and situations, and I'm interacting with many people in absolute overwhelm right now. They feel that no matter how much they do, they can never catch up. And inherent in this is the notion that they're not measuring up. So what would you say to them to lessen their burden? And what have you done in your own life to not operate from a place of overwhelm?
Well, I think that one of the things is that I have been, I think genetically received a great gift of denial around a number of things. And that actually has served me very well, you know, because I don't worry about things. But, you know, aside from, you know, sort of the denial piece, one of the things that I have practiced is that once I make a decision, I don't go back and second guess. And I think that a lot of people spend a lot of time making a decision and then second-guessing about a decision. And there's a lot of emotional energy that goes into that. And it's really wasted energy because with many decisions, you know, and particularly within academics and professional life, you know, most decisions don't result in anybody's death. You know, they're not crisis kinds of decisions. And most of the decisions, if it happens to not work out, if whatever the decision was and it doesn't work out, you can usually go back and make a different decision. So I had decided early on just not to get bogged down in making decisions and then worrying about them. Now,
so I'm
still
curious. So worry is, I'm just curious about this thing where you made a decision to not worry and kind of unfusing from outcome.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, with any decision, many times you can go in many different directions and they can all be fine in one way or another. They may lead to different outcomes, but, you know, you kind of go with that. And then, you know, there's another branching of things, you know, of potential decisions, and you go in another path. But, you know, it was probably, I can always feel when I don't make a decision fairly quickly, and I'm not saying that I make snap decisions, although all of us make snap judgments almost all the time. But, you know, in sort of major decisions, I go about getting the information that I can get, try to make, you know, get input, try to make the best decision possible that, you know, will lead to, you know, the outcome, you know, sort of the major goal, and then go with it. And the part that was conscious decision making on my part is not going back and worrying about the decision.
And it sounds like you've used intuition in this, though. Touching into intuition in your decision making.
To some extent, if intuition really is built on a whole set of experiences that you then draw on to make a decision, and you're not aware of all of the, you know, elements that go into it. But a lot of the decisions that I made are really data-driven, you know, in terms of, like, for instance, budget decisions and can we add new faculty and those kinds of things. There are some real data about what our financial situation is. And if we can figure out a way to bring on new faculty, you know, then we can, and we have the resources, then we can do it. If we can't, then we can't. And I don't worry about that. You know, then you know where you are and you know the factors that you have to deal with. And then you make, you know, adjustments in terms of your reality. So, yeah, I think that's one way. And another way is that I compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. You know, I compartmentalize the kinds of things that I need to do. I compartmentalize work kinds of things in terms of like just busy work that I have to sign forms and things like that. Okay, so that's one thing. And I just have a way of organizing it and doing that. And so I don't spend a lot of time with that either. And then, you know, for, you know, more substantive things, there's another kind of compartment, you know, that I operate out of. And, you know, then my personal life, you know, for kids and then, you know, for me. And I really try to keep boundaries clear. I've done a lot of work over the years on boundaries. And quite honestly, you know, it goes back to some of my history, you know, in my family of origin and boundaries and then boundaries with the second marriage and, you know, combining a family and those kinds of things. So I learned a lot about boundaries from my personal situation that I have applied to my professional life. And that's actually been really useful.
Yeah, I would say, and I certainly have witnessed that. And I wonder when we see people in overwhelm about this boundary setting, and sometimes it feels selfish. So could you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, I think, and I would say probably anyone in the nursing profession, male or female, you know, likely feels like, you know, we need to be giving our lives to others. And I think that there's a lot of reasons that we've chosen nursing and that we have that feeling and that, you know, we are selfish if we do things for ourselves. But, you know, it's almost like daily work that we have to do with ourselves in terms of our own self-awareness and taking care of ourselves. Now, even as I say that, I do blend things, like, for instance, when I go out and do my either brisk walk or slow jog or, you know, whatever I'm doing and I'm out for 45 minutes or an hour, you know, I actually go through things mentally, you know, in terms of, you know, work issues. You know, I'll a chunk of that time, you know, if there are some things that I'm thinking about and, you know, having to figure out, I'll think about them while I'm out there jogging. If there are some family things that I have to figure out, I'll think about them while I'm out there jogging. So, you know, I can actually use some of my personal time. In fact, to be honest, it kind of helps the distance go by a little faster.
You know? Yeah.
The more I'm mentally engaged, you know, in different kinds of things. And I set aside time in the evening before bed to read, you know, I just, and to read things that are not professional, you know, just to read for, you know, interest. And I try to alternate fiction and nonfiction so that I'm sort of trying, you know, constantly
learning
things that are
different. So, but I've
noticed,
you know, you
different.
Talked about the personal and the professional and those kind of boundaries. And the one thing that I've really noticed about you is that you've been able to maintain these really strong relationships. It was very evident, you know, at your retirement party and people who know you, you know, to know Jean is to love her. And I don't know if that's a separate compartment, but these relationships seem to be important, and there must have been a lot of nourishing those relationships. Can you speak to that those interpersonal skills that you
have? Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that comes from really that life is really about relationships. You know, it's not about budgets. It's not about, you know, it's about relationships, even in teaching relationships and in, you know, work setting relationships. It is about people and building, you know, relationships in a way that's constructive for both parties involved in a relationship or all parties involved in, you know, multiple relationships. And I think that just the fact that I value that is probably one of the things that people feel, you know, and recognize. And and it makes building the relationships, I think, much easier. And
so if somebody's in overwhelm, do those strong relationships combat that?
Yes, I think so. I think that they really do, because if people feel like there's someone that actually cares about the fact that they're in overwhelm, and to be honest, you know, I really believe that the overwhelm is a very real experience, because in my position as a dean, and before that a senior associate dean, I rarely worried about people not working hard enough and getting the job done. I worried much more about people's health and mental health and stresses in their life, and trying to figure out how to give people, you know, relief, you know, when particularly at times when people have needed it because of, you know, illness or just, you know, personal things are out of whack for them and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to, you know, sort of decrease, you know, teaching loads and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I think that's a reflection.
One of the things that struck me. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I think that's a reflection of valuing, you know, people and relationships. So.
Mm-hmm.
That was all I was going to say.
Because one of the things I'm noticing, just, you know, coaching lots of nurses all over the country and physicians and caring professionals, is that there and many students that were in a caring profession, and sometimes, you know, the workload even on the students or even on the faculty is not very caring. That it's almost punishing what they're expected. You know, these four large areas, particularly across every sector, are all being asked to do more with less. So they're expected to be of service to the university, you know, to be great teachers, to be clinically practicing, and to be doing research. And is this possible in your experience, or is it okay to pick one or two of those and still excel?
Well, you know, it depends upon, you know, certainly the guidelines, the promotion and tenure guidelines of institutions. But I personally think it's only possible to excel, you know, to do really well in two areas at most.
Mm-hmm.
And at GW, you know, the faculty were wise in terms of, you know, saying that, you know, for tenure, you know, for instance, you have to be excellent in two of those four areas instead of all four. You know, you have to have evidence of participation in all four in some way, but you know, really only excellence in two, because I think it is extraordinarily difficult. Extraordinarily difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
so and you look back on your, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and I think that for, you know, I know that every school has a different culture, you know, but I know that many schools, you know, do require substantive, you know, excellence in the four areas, but I think that many schools are looking at different guidelines these days for promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope
looking back on your life, have you, I don't know if you've been in overwhelm, and if you have, what have been your techniques to dig out of that or to climb out of that?
Actually, it's kind of simple. I make a list. I can always tell when I'm sort of heading, you know, a little bit over the edge. And what causes me to be over the edge is that I have all these things floating around, you know, and it feels like I can't grab on to any single one of them. But if I write them down, you know, and I have, and I can have my short-term, long-term, you know, sort of things. But if I write them down, it makes them concrete. It makes them concrete, and then I can figure out the plan for each one of them, you know. And then I always feel, I feel so much better. And then the other piece is just stepping out. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do is go see a movie. And I've done that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, and life feels different then, because I made a decision I feel a little bit more in control because I made that decision and I'm stepping out.
It's the counterintuitive thing is that when the work is coming at this breakneck speed, instead of going faster, you stop and step out.
Yes. Yep.
That's
and then I
amazing.
Can return
discipline to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's almost like, that is my way of sort of dealing with it, because I have been caught in some situations, if you have a grant that's due and whatnot, sometimes you can't do that. But even then, you can spend a little time stepping out and coming back and you have kind of a fresh look at things and it looks different.
So how did you, different. That's such a great thing, a skill set to have. How did you learn that?
By trial and error. I actually knew early on that making lists worked for me because I loved it to be able to cross things off, and it was just so reinforcing.
Oh, for satisfaction.
Yes. Uh-huh. Kind of like painting, you can see what you've done, after you've painted a wall. And the stepping out, I actually had to learn for myself. And it was, in fact, I can't even remember who it was. I was in a stressed mode. And this was fairly early, earlier in my career. And somebody said, well, why don't you just go away? Just go away. And I did, but then I found myself thinking, well, what am I going to do? Should I go to a museum and art? I can even remember that.
Uh-huh.
And it just so happened, that I forget the name of the theater, but it was down by GW near DuPont Circle. And I went there and I watched a movie. And that was, and I left and I felt so much better. And so I just that one time of doing it was enough to kind of be a way for me to deal with things in the future. I'd go to a movie.
Immediate shift, it sounds like, because I can remember, working side by side with you, and there was some issue with one of your kids, and I remember you saying, I can't talk to her right now. Like, you knew there was in another way, you're telling yourself you needed to step out, and that discipline of having that emotional self-regulation is rare indeed.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we absolutely need to give people permission to do and encourage them to do, to just step out for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Go get a cup of coffee, go do whatever it is that, works.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost the opposite. Sheryl Sandberg tells us to lean in and to not leave until we leave. And I'm wondering, what would the title of your book on women in leadership be?
Yeah, well, when I read that in your notes, I thought, oh, my gosh. And there are two titles, and I don't disagree with leaning in. I mean, because you do have to lean in. But there are, these little pockets that you have to create for yourself. The title of my book would either be Chill Out or, The other one is don't settle. I mean, if I were doing a leadership, sort of book, I would encourage women to don't just settle, because I see so many people, who, aren't, they have these dreams and, they have a lot of challenges, and they're fairly quickly to settle for an easier road.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've been talking about, taking time and, stepping back and those kinds of things. But on the other hand, I think that women need to commit, to real excellence in what they're doing. And that does require you know, probably more focus and working. I can't say working smarter because I think people do work smart, you know, but trying to create some boundaries so that they can do the work that they most highly value and negotiate with, like, deans and vice presidents and whomever they have to negotiate to get what they want to do the work that they want. And I just see so many people hanging back and settling for, you know, teaching the same course for 5 years in a row or 10 years in a row or 15 years in a row. And they get burned out doing that when they had lots of other ideas, but they never really shared them. And they didn't, and they didn't, you know, advocate for themselves. One faculty member, and as an example of many, you know, she was struggling, and I actually got her a coach. And the coach helped her a lot, you know, in terms of she finally came to me and told me what she wanted. And it was totally doable. But I didn't, you know, if she hadn't said, I wouldn't have known. So it was just kind of interesting. People have to advocate and not settle. Hello? Well, I think we're done.
Jean?